You are listening to episode 15 of the Paper Player Podcast. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined with my co-host, Jeff, JB, and our 1K winner, Josh. Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Pretty solid, man. I got smashed, and I think JB did better, but also got smashed.
Hey, I did fine.
I had quite a good time, so much so that even during the day, my watch, my pedometer watch, like, started vibrating, and I thought it, like, I hit my 14,000 step goal because I was shuffling all day or whatever. Later in the night, I saw that I didn't hit my step goal for the day, and I was like, oh, what? My watch went off earlier. And then I look at it, and I hit my heart rate goal for the week. And I, like, didn't ride my bike for a couple days that week. So, like, I had no progression on my heart rate goal for the week.
It's getting pumped.
Right. What do you want from a heart rate goal? Do you just want it high so you burn calories?
And I think it's, like, just the default one, which is, like, 150 active minutes. So, like, over 111 beats per minute or whatever.
Sure. Interesting. I guess I never, like, monitored my heart rate. I did wear a Fitbit for a while, but those things just look so feminine. Like, because they're just skinny. And I despise... I have a bad beat story about an Apple Watch, which I almost paid. I was going to buy one for, like a treat myself. And then when I went to go buy it, I went to Target and bought it. And it came in, like, the Apple seal. I was with my wife, and we went to the car, and she's like, open it, so you can try it on right away. I open it, no Apple Watch inside.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I was like, I was like, thank God you told me to open this, because I wasn't planning on opening this for a couple days. Like, I was just going to leave it on the counter and forget about it. And then, like, I tried to go back to Target. Oh, there's no Apple Watch in here. So, like, I literally stormed right back in the store. I was like, you guys can watch camera. You guys can come search my car. I'm not hiding this. And if you look at the inside of this case, it clearly was returned, because there was, like, makeup in, like, on the padding.
Right.
So someone bought the Apple Watch, put it on, sealed the box, put it like a saran wrap seal or whatever, returned it, and they just had to eat it. And then after that, I was like, I'm not buying an Apple Watch. I had a bad taste in my mouth.
Right.
Did they at least refund you?
Yeah. I mean, it was with them. Like, I literally walked out of the store, and in 4 minutes, I walked right back in. I was like, dude, there's no Apple Watch in here.
Oh, no.
And it was like a real, they were like, it's a high ticketed item. So it's like, oh, we have to look at film. Like, yeah, do what you got to do. So I ended up, like, staying at the store for like an hour and being like, I didn't steal this damn watch, but, you know, like, right. I did just purchase it, and it's expensive. So it's like, please, I didn't get the item I wanted. And I was like, can you guys look up if someone returned this and all that? And basically, after some amount of time, it was kind of late, like 7, 8 p.m. So the real manager of what I mean by real manager is the individual who runs the store, and like the busy hours, had to come in and like was like, yeah, someone did return this, because nobody at that store could figure out if it's been returned or not. They have like a tracking system, and it's like, yeah, dude, I'm telling you, the person who returned this stole it. Yeah, so that's my story with watches.
I have a nice Fitbit. I have the Fitbit Ionic or whatever, so it's like it looks like an Apple Watch. It's not like the little skinny one, so
yeah,
I like the one I have, but I definitely had my heart rate going all day. I definitely had a like giant, you know, release of happiness or whatever you want to say. I was really excited after I won and couldn't stop smiling all night.
It's a good feeling, man. It's good. And yeah, I mean, you played solidly, and I think the deck that you brought, which we'll get into a little bit later, was quite strong. All right. Jeff, did you play any Magic over the weekend?
Sadly, I did not. I had some personal issues I had to take care of, so I didn't really get to mess with Magic. I did a little bit on Friday. Forgotten Realms draft. I think I went like 4-3. I'm kind of sick of that format. I'm ready for something else to draft, but didn't get too much Magic in over the weekend.
Did you do any Jumpstart on Arena or anything?
Oh, that is right. Yes, I did. I had saved up like 14,000 gold just to play it when it came out, and I kind of burned through it quick. Like, if I didn't win my first match or two, I would just drop the deck and go to the next one, because I just wanted to keep opening. But it was a lot of fun. Like, having the huge variety of like different types was really cool. Blue-red seems to be the best that I've been able to draft. Every time I drafted it, I definitely went 2-0, because it was just two wins to get two rares from Jumpstart or whatever. But it was a lot of fun. I'm excited for all the cards it's bringing to Historic, too, because I'm a big Historic fan.
Yeah, I think a lot of people from the Historic standpoint that want to play the Historic format are really salty about Jumpstart.
I'm salty about the combo that is in Historic now. There's a 2-1 flyer that when it dies, you return a creature with power one or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. And there is a black card that costs one black that says creature, what's the name of that? Where it perpetually gets -2/-1. So you target that creature and then have Blood Artist out, and it's infinite triggers because it brings itself back.
Over and over and over.
And if you don't have the Blood Artist and you are losing the game, you can do that combo of targeting it, and it draws the game. After 20 triggers, it says you have to do something else or you will draw the game, and you choose, there's no other creatures in your graveyard, so it draws the game.
Slam.
Do you think that that's going to lead to altering the -2/-1 card?
That, or I think they're going to ban the creature. Because you can't ban the card because the new Davriel has a similar ability where he gives something perpetually -3/-3, I want to say. So like either you'd have to ban or change both black cards, or you just ban the creature.
That's fair. But they're probably more likely to ban the creature. I would be fine if they just kept the Davriel. And the only reason I say that is because you're not guaranteed. It's random, right? You get to choose from 3 of 8 abilities. So it's less than
50% chance. No, he has a minus ability that actually just says perpetually.
All right, never mind. Yep, then there's probably the creature just got to go.
But again, like, you can get around it by, like, you literally playing Graft Digger's Cave. It's the Hogak argument when everyone would be like, oh, just play Graveyard Hate. But it's like, yeah, but you have to have it. And at this point, you have to play it main deck to win game one.
It's always problematic. So the things I want to talk about today, or we're going to talk about today, are going to be referring to the couple spoilers that we got. Some of the predictions that we may have about the new set, which we will get spoilers tomorrow on. Today is Wednesday, my dudes. And then we're going to actually talk about our 1K performances. Me, Josh, and JB, we all went to a 1K over the weekend, and we'll kind of get into the decks we played, why we made those choices, and kind of how our matchups fell. So right away with the Innistrad Midnight Hunt spoilers, I think they revealed 2 cards today. And of those 2 cards, one of them revealed a pretty impactful mechanic that, Jeff, I know we talked about it a little bit briefly, the day and night mechanic. I want you to express what you said to me earlier about the frustration of it.
One of my big qualms with it is the point of printing werewolves, I felt, was either you're going to power creep them so they get played, or it was for EDH players. Well, that stuff doesn't interact. And now this is one more thing I have to keep track of while playing. Like, there's already so many things in this game that you have to keep track of, not even including life, but you have, like, energy day and night, like, all this other stuff, and it's like, at one point, you're going to have to carry a briefcase of things just to keep track of everything besides your deck.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. And like the way day and night works too, like day, it says, as it becomes day, transform all non-bound or nightbound permanents. If a player casts no spells during their own turn, it becomes night next turn. And then night, as it becomes night, transform all day-bound permanents. Permanents enter the battlefield nightbound. If a player casts at least 2 spells during their own turn, it becomes day next turn.
There's also the, like, this definitely seems like they designed this with it being on Arena. And being on Arena, you know, and you don't have physically keep track of it, whereas, like, in paper, this does seem like a mess.
In general, like, your biggest draw for this set was, like, werewolves. Everybody wanted werewolves. Here's werewolves. But guess what? Those 30 other werewolves that exist don't do anything for you with these.
Right.
Yeah, it's specifically a daybound or nightbound mechanic. Mainly, it's just you don't have to keep track of daybound or night or day or night until a card that has the mechanic daybound enters the battlefield. And then from that point on, even when that card is gone, you have to keep track of day and night.
Also, I'd like to point out the difference between day and night also is with night, permanents enter the battlefield nightbound. So if you have a card that has daybound and nightbound, it enters in, like a werewolf would enter in as a werewolf. Which is also another, like, it's just going to get so confusing having so many different types of werewolves. Like, you know, you could have an original Innistrad one and then one from the new set, and one's going to enter in as a werewolf and the other one isn't. I just don't like how the flavor doesn't work well together.
That's one of the concerns I definitely have, and I'm not sure how other people feel, but I just wish they were the old werewolf mechanic, even though that old one had, like, feel bads. It worked and everybody understood it, and now it's tweaked, but it's different enough where you're going to assume that the old werewolves or new werewolves do what you think they do, and they actually do a different thing.
And there's going to be so many, like, I know you hate this term, Tony, but boomer magic players that are going to be like, thinking in their head as they're strategizing during a match, they're going to be like, all right, this guy's got a werewolf on the field. If I cast two spells, like, it's going to, or on his turn, I can transform it, or I can stop it from transforming, and that's not going to work.
Or just even casting one spell a turn, like one on your turn, on my turn. That kind of gameplay only exists with previous werewolves.
I mean, you can transform it on your turn, but now you're forced to play two spells on your turn to make it daytime.
JB, you got the spoiler up. I want you to read this card because I love when you read.
Okay. Arlen, the Pack's Hope, Daybound. If a player casts no spells during their own turn, it becomes night next turn. Plus one, until your next turn, you may cast creature spells as though they had flash, and each creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional plus one counter. Minus three, create two green wolf creature tokens. And the transform side, when it goes to night, is nightbound. If a player casts at least two spells during their own turn, it becomes day next turn. The plus two on that side, which starts with four loyalty, is add red green. And the zero cost is until end of turn, Arlen, the Moon's Fury, becomes a 5/5 werewolf creature with trample, indestructible, and haste.
So if you have it, if it's nighttime already or nightbound and you play this from your hand,
you get a 5/5 haster with trample
and indestructible.
It reminds me a lot of the red god from Amonkhet, Hazoret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That card was fantastic.
That was also a three drop, wasn't it?
No, that was a four.
It was a four.
Thank goodness
that was.
So you think this card is going to be something?
This does have Hazoret written all over it. I mean, hard to say right now because it's the only card we know with Daybound and Nightbound. It's definitely pushed.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I have no opinion on the card. The first flip planeswalker we had was Garrick.
Right.
And that cool. One was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I love that one.
And then the next. I remember it was real good. Was Arlen.
I don't remember which the original Arlen did. To be
she
honest,
was bad.
Yeah, I bet the original Garrick got played because it made 2/2s and fought things.
He was played in that birthing pod deck for a while too,
because
he birthing potted on the back.
Legacy Maverick played it too.
It's definitely a good card. Well, was a good card. I don't know where it stands in this day and age, but I just don't see it anywhere anymore.
Like a $2 card now, I think.
All right, Josh, our EDH aficionado, go ahead and read Sarith. I think his name or Sarith.
Yep, Sarith.
Sarith, the Viper's Fang, 2 and green. Legendary creature, human warlock. Other tapped creatures you control have death touch, and other untapped creatures you control have hexproof. 1 generic mana and tap. Untap another target creature or land you control, and it is a 3/4. I am very excited for this card. It slots right into my Finn EDH deck.
Ooh.
That's a cool card. I like the design of this card. I really thought they were going to go away from hexproof, and it's right here.
I thought so as well. Wow, maybe that's a sign that hexproof will be in this set, because we had that discussion before the cast about hexproof, and I thought, I guess it's going to be Ward in this new upcoming set if they do put it in there, but I guess it looks like hexproof is a flavor tied to Innistrad.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm okay with how it exists, because it means that your creatures that are blocking can't be removed from blocking, but the creatures that are attacking, you can obviously use bolts on them.
I think this is a EDH all-star.
Pretty cool. It's the best way to protect your creatures.
Untap your guy's cradle.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's where it's like the most powerful.
Right.
And that's all we got for spoilers, guys. That's it. It's pretty short.
There was a leaked like cell phone picture of one of the commanders that got released. Leonor Autumn Sovereign.
They'll probably release that one tomorrow. I don't know. Was it awesome? What does it do?
It's green, white, 2 for an 0/4 legendary creature, human noble. It's got coven. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a 1/1 counter on up to one target creature you control. Then if you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, draw a card. It's mediocre. It's going to be like a token deck. Oh, not even token. It's just going to be a counter deck.
Yeah, it's probably medium.
It's a weird.
It's probably a purpose leak.
The only thing that kind of catches me off out of like left field with these kind of cards, like these ones, is every now and then, like Ethereal Forger, it'll get playing like Legacy, and you're like, where is this even from? And then you have to like read this card, and I'm sure in the hit, like out of all the Magic or Legacy Magic that's played like across the United States in paper, there's gotta be so many random cards that are like, I didn't even know this was a thing, and someone's playing it against you, and it's like a random hoser.
Right. I was just gonna say, for the sake of conversation, what is that card? Because I actually don't know.
It's the Delve Whale. The
Oh yeah. I thought about playing that.
When it attacks, you get a card you delved back to your hand.
Yep. Yeah. I like that card.
It was okay when I played it.
Murktide was printed, and that was like 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
I was into that. And really, the only reason that Ethereal Forger actually saw play is because Dreadhorde got banned, and people were trying to replace what Dreadhorde was doing. And they're not the same card, but that card was like medium for a little bit. It just wasn't as super dominant.
Right.
It replaced Spragavan.
I was still playing Stormwing Entity. I liked that card better.
I do like that card a lot.
I still like that card right now too. It's different than Murktide. It's a different deck.
It gets around Fatal Push.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, so does Mark. Both cards do the same.
Yeah, agreed.
It depends on what you're trying to do with your deck. If you're going full out prowess, it's much better that way. Whereas Murktide is just like hold up counter magic, drop a giant 7/7, hold up counter magic to protect it.
Right.
So we did all participate in the 1K that was hosted by Hobby Knights. It's located in West Bend. Special thanks to them because this is the first time that I think we got to experience an actual comp REL tournament or comp, whatever you want to call it, competitive rule setting. And even the judge was like, man, this has been a while. And it was fun watching him see like, oh, Wizard Event Reporter doesn't exist anymore. How do we do this? And then that was kind of entertaining. Me, JB, and Josh all went and put up probably the most mediocre record. And I did make a audible, which is probably something I would vote against in the future. But based on my matchups, I would have kept it that way. I know Jeff, JB, you played classic blue red, and then Josh, you played blue red. But what was the tech that you had in there?
I was playing Spell Spider Sprite and other fairies, Brazen Borrower.
I would like to point out, I listened to the podcast last week, and Josh did tell you to stick to Hammer Time because you played it.
I wanted to say that. I told you so.
No, I'm actually pretty happy I didn't. I don't think there was zero copies of that deck in the room. And Hammer Time is one of the worst. I mean, there was, what, 7 elemental players? I guess, well, let's talk about the meta. There was at least 7 different people on elementals.
And burn. There's a million people on burn.
Yeah. And with how frequently people were playing, I mean, I think everybody and their mother had EE in their sideboard that day. So there, I couldn't imagine trying to beat that card 6 rounds or 5 rounds or 4 rounds in a row.
Yeah, that sounds atrocious.
Yeah, it was. The deck I was on the Wafatapa blue-white list, which it plays Chalice of the Void in the main deck. That's probably the sole reason I won my games, because I think just so many people just played into that card over and over and over. And then guys played into it that were skill testing me, and it's like, yeah, no, it's countered. Like, yeah, I would literally just tap it. They would put a card in the stack. I was just, no, right in the graveyard. I'm like, had to see. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. Put it in the graveyard. Really? Yes.
If someone said had to see, that you could call a judge, right? Because that's like angry.
Yes.
It's legal to cast. You can cast whatever spell.
But if you know it gets, if you know it's supposed to get countered and you don't counter it,
then openly admit
that's angle shooting.
Well, angle shooting isn't against the rules.
It's not, and it's also a missed. It's, to be fair, it's a triggered ability that I am responsible for.
Maybe there's still you still can't play Decept. You can't like do something that's against the rules. Like, will you can't knowingly do something against the rules. That is a rule of Magic. You can't like knowingly cheat.
Yeah, but you can't also babysit your opponent's triggers, right? If I miss the trigger, the spell resolves, and then we can go back. That's something that gets handled in Legacy all the time, and people definitely do it all the time.
I'm saying, by saying I gotta see, that's admitting to intent to cheat.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, I had guys say that, and I was like, okay.
That's super weird to me.
But then you also have to like prove it, and that's just like a whole nother debacle to deal with.
You just admitted it.
That's hearsay. He's, like, yeah, you would have to have witnesses.
Yeah, and then I didn't really. Everybody had to put them in the graveyard. Like, I could have done that, but that's not where I was gonna be. I was like, okay, like sure, it goes in the graveyard. And it was fun watching people plan out their turns, watching them tap one mana, and I'm just like, here we go, and it's coming. And they would just like roll their eyes, like again. I'm like, yeah, this is the third time you've done this match. Right. That was fun.
I don't know how people walk into it that easily every time.
I'll admit, in our match, Tony, there was a couple times I thought about just casting a card to put it into the graveyard to fuel my Murktide.
I actually won a game doing that because I had someone who played a Void on me on one, and I needed to get enough stuff in the bin for a Murktide, so I just continuously cast into it and then cast my Murktide.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've won a match before playing with Mono Red Prowess against, what do they call it, Red Prism deck, and he went Chalice on one, and I had a Swiss Spear out, and I just kept casting spells.
You still get the Prowess trigger.
It happens all the time. Murktide is a perfectly fine reason to put your spells into the graveyard if you're never going to cast them anyways.
Yeah. Also got the ability to dig further with a Dragon Rage Channeler out because it's still casting, so you get the trigger.
Yep. Yeah. Here's the question. If Chalice is on two and you Brazen Bower bounce, does it counter?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Because on the stack, it's only two, right? But everywhere else, it's five.
No, it's three only.
Oh, okay.
It's not a split card. It's a different thing. They don't get combined. So, like, if you flip it to Bob, it's only three. Where Fire Ice is four.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird. I mean, whatever. It's just the way it is.
Or like a DFC too. What happens with Bob and a MDFC, such as like, you know, one of
it only counts the first side.
Yeah, right. It's only caring about the side that's revealed.
It's the same reason why you could play the reverse side of the name of that guy. Yeah, Tybalt.
Yeah, because when you cascade, it only counts the original spell's mana cost, but you can still flip it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that had a recent rules change too.
Tony,
mm-hmm.
What were the decks that you played against?
I played round one. I played against Elementals, and I won that match 1-0-1. Which in Companion you cannot actually put draws in, so I had to enter the match as 1-0. Little knock on Companion there. Round two, I played against Josh, and I got smashed. The games game one, he just played Monkey. I didn't have an answer for it. And then game two, he played Monkey. I had an answer, but couldn't deal with the Murktide the second time he cast it, and I just kind of had a bad run with that. Round three, I went against the Rack, which was playing Urza Saga, and me having main deck Spreading Seas just kind of embarrassed his deck. And he would get me down to two cards, and I would just Factor Fiction, taking the biggest pile every time, and then that was the end of the game. Round four, I played against Blue Black Mill, which was the player that was trying to cast things through, knowingly casting things through my Chalice of the Void. In fact, one of the times he was skill testing me, I was, yep, nothing. He's like, it puts it into play. It was a Hedron Crab, and I just Archmage Charm stole it. I was like, we're going to play this game. Okay, I'll take it. And then I was able to Teferi Tuck things and then be able to mill it away from him. So that was good. He got a little frustrated by that. I got smashed that matchup, though. In game one, he mulled a six. I didn't know what he was on. Went fetch line. He went double Archive Trap, double Surgical, taking out my win conditions. I was like, wow. That's
pretty good.
I was like, oh my goodness. And then he literally played one crab. And then I was like, well, that's that. Like, I can't really survive here. Game two, I was able to chalice him. And then game three, him being on the play went land crab. I went land, nothing. He went land, or he went crab, fetch land, 12. And then the next two turns was fetch land. And that was 36. That was basically the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
While being able to manipulate, like, with surgicals and stuff. Round five, I went against, like, a Wurza list that was playing, you know, Thopter Sword combo, and I was able to beat him in turns because of Shark Typhoon. Thank God that card exists in that deck. And then round six, I played against the Mirror, which he had game one, he drew four Shark Typhoons to my zero, so I just lost due to damage. And then game two, I had to make an aggressive play because he was the first one to get a Castle Art of Veil on the table. So playing Drago, meaning he's just going to be able to tap for 1/1s every single turn. And the list that I saw, none of them were playing Force of Negation, so I played in a way to resolve a 3-mana Teferi and keep Spell Pierce to protect it because he was on two lands and he counterspelled it. I Spell Pierced it, he Force of Negation, untapped, played a 5-mana Teferi, that was the end of that game. But those were my matchups. I had weird, like, Mill was something I wasn't expecting. I know you, JB, you and I talked about, like, should I put this Kozlik down on my sideboard? Nah, nobody's here with Mill. And then literally play Mill and get smashed.
Yeah.
Were they playing Tasha City's Laughter?
No, that card's heinously bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah, that's just really bad. It just doesn't has an effect that you don't want. Your Glimpse of the Unthinkable is going to be a stronger play, and those decks, I think the typical Mill deck plays 18 to 19 lands, and of those lands, four of them are Ghost Quarters. And those Ghost Quarters are typically to target themselves to get another land trigger to come in for the Hedron Crabs. Like, yes, you can force your opponent to search, but in matchups where it's like, I'm not going to search unless I absolutely, I'll just take the Wasteland. I'll just treat it as a, because you don't have to search on that card.
Yeah.
It's an elective.
It's not that other one, the one that costs three to do.
Field of Ruin, it's you must. You have no choice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Whereas that one's like, you may. It's like, okay, I'll just treat that as a wasteland.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, like, my matchups weren't great. And in hindsight, like, having zero reps with the deck, I played, like, tight, but I didn't keep hands that were strong against, like, when I went against Josh. I should have mulliganed to Prismatic Ending, maybe, in game one, just because I did know what was Josh was on. And then the mill, literally, if I don't have Kozlik to my sideboard, I just don't have any way to win that matchup. It's really, really difficult as is, because I have no way to put any pressure on. So he's got all the time in the world to Archive Trap me. And then just the mirror just kind of, it's 50-50. And I, because of who had the lands or Shark Typhoons, really dictated who had that matchup.
Did you play that deck at FNM?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but
Fresh on it.
Yeah, I was fresh on it, and I thought I played really tight, because with how I was playing against, like, my Elementals opponent and my Wurza, I just outplayed them, but they just didn't respect certain plays, and a lot of people did just constantly walk into Chalice of the Void and was trying to resolve spells. Like, he would go Chromatic Storm, I'm like, yep, just put that in the graveyard, or, you know, Ephemerate, which is huge for the Elementals matchup. He would make his whole turn would be to set up this board state where he was able to go, like, Fury into Ephemerate to kill my Planeswalkers, and he would Fury, I let it resolve, deal four to one of my Planeswalkers, it's still alive. He'd go Ephemerate, I'm like, all right, that goes right to the graveyard, and he would just, like, put his hands on his head, like, oh, well, that screws up everything I was gonna do. He probably would have maybe went an Omnath route or something different. But yeah, those were my matchups. And
what'd you play against, JB?
Round one, it was a Bring to Light Scapeshift deck, which at the start of the round, when he fetched his first two lands, I kind of figured it was the old Omnath lists, because it's pretty similar in terms of the land base. So I was like, my mentality was like, okay, he's going to be playing like Omnath stuff. And most of it's kind of similar anyways, so it wasn't that bad of a guess. But I ended up getting stomped by him because he I'd get him down to like three or four, or like bolt range or whatever, and then he would just kind of take control of the game and then beat me with Scapeshift, because I wouldn't have enough, you know, counter magic up in order to stop everything he was trying to do. And then game two, he ended up bouncing my Murktide three times in that game, which felt pretty bad because all I needed to do was swing with the Murktide to win. So I was like just out of reach of winning that game twice. And
each time that card's bounced, it gets harder and harder to cast.
Yeah, I was casting it for 5 mana and 2 cards out of the graveyard just to try and keep pressure on the board. But then round two, I'm not even going to mention it because it was essentially a guy who brought his kitchen table deck, and I felt pretty bad just kind of stomping all over him.
You only playing against Worm's Tooth, the old when you cast a green spell, gain a life.
It was like some goofy, he turned his +1/+1 counters on his guys into 1/1s on the board, and it was a kitchen table deck. Round three, I played against Cascade, and Fire and Ice like took me to town, man. Fire and Ice destroyed me, because it would just clear off the board for my Ragavan or my
Dragon Rage.
Dragon Rage, and that would just slow me down so much. So even though I had a bunch of cards that were pretty good against the Rhinos, it just ended up being like terrible for me. In game three, I ended up getting them down to like bolt range again, and I had 2 Engineered Explosives on zeros through that game, and then countered 2 more of his, whatever that card is that makes the 4/4 Rhinos, but he used Endurance in order to shuffle them back into his deck so he could do it all over again, and I was like, okay, I'm not getting out of this. The round four was Elementals. I think it was the same player that Tony played in round one. And we got to a game three after I kind of jacked him up pretty good on game two by continuously bouncing his Omnath every time he would try and fetch. So I would let him go to fetch, and he would get, you know, trying to get the second trigger. I would bounce it with Brazen Borrower, and then he would have to recast it and waste his whole turn doing that, which just gave me enough time to win. And in game three, on the play, I got a turn 3 Blood Moon, and he couldn't win. Round 4 was the green-white Heliod combo deck. My opponent tried to play a Ballista in the first game with Coco, and the judge was sitting there and was like, no, your Ballista is just going to die instantly if you do this. So, you know, after the judge explained it to him for like 3 minutes why it wouldn't work the way he wanted it to. He ended up just scooping game one. And then in game two, he just drew a bunch of lands. So I countered the one important card that he played or whatever, and it was over. And then in game six, I played against an Eldrazi Tron deck. You know, the really tight games. In game two, it ended up coming down to him being able to get a what is the name of that stupid card?
Thought Not Seer.
Wait, did not have any Reality Smasher?
No.
What's the name of that card? Any card in Magic.
Kozilek. There's so many Eldrazi.
The Planeswalker.
Who again?
Karn?
Karn, the one that tutors. Yeah. So he played Karn and just got to go to town on me because he could just go pick whatever he really needed to beat me. And then in game three, he made a huge mistake where he had a Blast Zone on one. He had an Urza's Saga in play that was going to three. And he floated the mana properly, got a map from his deck, and he had the Blast Zone, which he could have activated with the floating mana and the two other lands that he had on the field to kill, like, wipe my board and, like, take over the game. And he just moved to combat because he really wanted to attack with his 5/5, whatever that one is called.
Reality Smasher.
Yeah, he really wanted to attack me with it. So he moved to combat. The mana, you know, goes away, and he goes and attacks, and then he goes to his second main phase, and he looks at me, and he goes, I only have two mana. And I'm like, yes, you do. And then he just was like, all right, that's it. I got to pick up my cards. It's over. Yeah, so I ended up getting that one from a guy making a huge play mistake. But, yeah, I ended up going 4-2 overall, which, yeah, I'm fine with it.
What place did you get?
I don't know, it was terrible. I had really bad breakers because I had that kitchen table guy and I lost all my losses all came early. So it was like the people that I lost to just ended up not doing that well.
It's not true. And we'll get into that later.
Why?
Josh, what did you play?
We'll get into it. I'll explain companion later. All right, Josh, tell us how you won.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. I was on blue-red. It was pretty much effectively blue-red Murktide. The only changes I made is I dropped two counter spells and two Archmage's Charms for a place at a spell starter sprite. I was already playing three Brazen Borrowers. I also played a Singleton Vendilion Click that never showed up all day. So round one, I was paired against Grixis Shadow. Game one was a very back and forth long game. I ended up getting there. His deck is all one drop, so I did a pretty good counter with the spell starter sprite to pull ahead in that game. I remember winning in the air. Game two, he went first. I won the die roll on this one. Game two, he went first, and he just ran over me. That game was pretty quick. Game three was another long game, back and forth. He was playing Dress Down. I remember I got the Dress Down with the spell starter sprite in game three, and that's what ended up winning. We won with 3 minutes left on the clock. It was a very long game. Respect to that player. That was probably one of the toughest matchups of the day. It was round one. Game two, I played against Tony, and we discussed that already. Tony kind of flooded out in game one, couldn't stop the Ragavan. Game two, we fought over Teferi for a little bit, but then eventually a Murktide came down and closed the game out. Game three, I played against a combo deck. This matchup, this player also made the top eight. Game one, I saw the Acerak guy, so I presumed he was doing some combo with the Acerak. I don't remember exactly how the combo works, but I kept it. I kept Unholy Heating it and kept that off the table, and I won game one. Game two, he cascades into the Glimpse tomorrow and ended up with the Griselbrand on the field, and he got me, and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. But game three, I hit triple Spellstarter's Fight, which just wrecks that deck, yeah. And I got there. Game round four, so I'm 3-0 at this point. Round four, I get paired against Burn, and he gets me game one, like the Burn Dream, and then I get there in games two and three with some very tight plays. I remember being very close. He was playing Ragavan in his build, but I kept his Ragavan one of the games. He told me after the match that I was the first person to give him his losses all day. Which goes to show, because Burn, he didn't even make the top eight, but there was still two other Burn players in the top eight at the end of the day. So that was my 4-0 beginning. I intentionally drawn in rounds four and
five and six
to get into the top eight, where I was seeded number two. So round one, I get paired against the Mill guy. that Tony played in round one. Game one, he double archive trapped me, but I think I still pulled the win out eventually. I think he just kind of fizzled, ran out of gas, and I eventually got there. Game two, he was making comments that we didn't get provided deck lists. Game two, I kind of just turn one Ragavan, turn two Blood Moon, game over. He was making comments that he didn't get to sideboard properly, but however you want to take that. I feel like he couldn't kill the Ragavan. He tried to with the
Dragon Lock. Yeah.
But there was nothing there. So that was that. Game two in the top, or so semifinals top eight, I get paired against the Elementals player. I think it's the same player you played against, Tony.
I don't think so. No. It was a different one.
He didn't make it.
It was the guy on crutches, I think.
Yeah, that's the guy I played.
Yeah, I didn't play that. It was a different. There was like I said, I think there was seven people at the tournament out of 38 that were on Elementals.
Yeah, because I beat the Elementals guy in round four, so there was no way he was making it to top eight. Yeah.
It was fun watching them in the mirror match, both not being able to kill each other because they both had 1,000 Elementals on the board.
Spellcenter Sprite was doing well for me all day because everyone's playing one mana removal, and that's what the card's there for, is to stop the one mana removal. Elementals, that's not very relevant. That was probably the Death Shadow matchup and the Elementals matchup were probably the hardest matchups of the day for me, because the Death Shadow matchup is just like everything is just as efficient as I'm playing. You know, the efficiency is just through the roof. And then the Elementals deck, like a lot of my stuff was just dead.
So that's something I was going to bring up, because you were talking about Spellcenter Sprite being her like all-star surprise. My thought was, if I would have, because I kind of looked at what I played against, and if I would have had Spellcenter Sprite in playing against the decks that I did, like, it would do nothing against Bring to Light. It would do nothing against Elementals. It would do nothing against Heliod. It would do nothing against Eldrazi Tron. So, like, obviously, in terms of a meta perspective, I can understand where it might be better. But I feel like if I personally would have had that in my deck for this tournament, it would have been horrible for me.
However, I will say that in this match, so the Elementals game, I don't want to say I won in two. I can't remember if he beat me one game. I think he did, because it was a long matchup. Sure. I'll say I won in three. But I do remember that I couldn't get anything with the Spellcenter Sprites. But the real problem with that deck is that he was always trying to there was a real cost to two for one-ing yourself a bunch of times. And then in the last game, I did end up, he tried to ephemerate, set himself up for the ephemerate blowout, and I got the ephemerate with the Spellcenter Sprite.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably important that you had Spellcenter Sprite in that corner case, especially they also have the Harbinger too, which is one mana, and they don't necessarily play that on turn one. Yeah. Sometimes they just go like, you know, fetch, land, go, or the Ephemerate is what they could double fury you, and I don't think you can come back from that. It's just too devastating. So like, I mean, Counterspell does the same thing, except the difference is you get to put pressure on the board. One damage may not add up, but in a matchup where you're just, you know, tempoing them, try not to get the late game, that one damage will add up, whereas Counterspell or Archmage's Charm won't do that.
Yeah,
I definitely had the tempo plays with the Aether Gusts in that matchup too. That was a very tough matchup. I did end up getting there though.
Out of curiosity, did you have the chance to do the really fun thing where they Flamekin Brawler and you just mill two cards from their deck?
No.
You know what I'm talking about though?
With a Thought Scour?
Yeah, you Thought Scour them after they set up their top deck.
No, that didn't ever show up.
Okay.
A lot of the times I was boarding out my Thought Scours.
Really?
I was boarding out Thought Scours a lot and the Expressive Iterations a lot.
Interesting. I found the same thing with my Expressive Iteration, is that it was always the first card to go just because it was too slow in a lot of matchups.
I would also, the Vapor Snag I would pull out too. That was like the saucy one of them. I was playing a single Vapor Snag and a single Tar Fire, both of which were relevant throughout the day. I respect playing both of them. Anyway, moving forward, Elementals player was one of the toughest matchups. Thumbs up to that guy. Good game and good matchup. Moving forward in the finals, I get paired against Burn. The Burn players, I want to know what happened with their semifinals matchup, because the Burn players got paired against each other and they had like a 50-minute match.
Wow.
So I want to know what happened with that.
Dragon Claws, possibly Lightning Helixes, who knows?
I'm just speaking out of my ass, but I feel like both of them were pretty, they were both kind of younger. I feel like they were inexperienced and they were both kind of a lot of nerves.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely felt that in the finals match that my opponent had a lot of nerves that matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I was the top remaining seed. I got to go first, and I kind of just steamrolled my opponent. He didn't ever really. I don't think he really even played very much either game. He couldn't. Game one, I think I just, you know, two for one to him or something, but I kind of just went over the top, flew over him. In game two, I stuck the early Ragavan and he couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty hilarious when you go like Ragavan and they go Goblin Guy, don't attack. You're like, oh, such a win.
Yeah.
You're like, I'll Lightning Bolt your guy, steal the card. Oh, it's another Lightning Bolt? I'll use that treasure to throw it at your face.
I did draw like all four Ragavans that last game.
You drew three. I was watching on the feature. When you were on Twitch, I was watching.
Didn't I put one to the bottom though?
I don't know if I could see that one, but you played one, it got Lightning Bolted. You played a second one and that one died to a Searing Blaze only for one damage, and then you played a third one and the guy just like looked at his hand and was like, okay, that's it.
I think I mulliganed that hand and I put one to the bottom as well.
Yeah, so it's gotta be pretty nice to go Ragavan and just their deck's all red, so you're gonna be able to cast your spells with or without the treasure, and then you're just playing two spells to their one, and you're a tempo deck. So now you are the burn deck because you're playing burn your deck and their burn deck.
I think I won with the Lightning Bolts in hand.
Yeah, you had a pretty, I think one of your Ragavans, your third one, you saved it with a Spellstarter Sprite, and you could just see on camera that guy's like, that was his like game plan, and he just got deflated, and he's like, ugh, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Overall, I really liked the deck. The only change I would do for it, I was playing a single Vendilion Click, which I never played all day, and there's a lot of times I would wish I would have had another Murktide, so I think I would switch that back to the third Murktide. And that would be the only change I would make to this build of the deck.
You're only running two, huh?
Yep. I was playing four Sprite, four Ragavan, four DRC, three Brazen Borrower.
One V-Click.
One Bing V-Click. Yeah.
I know me and you talked about this earlier, but I figure we should bring it up on the podcast too. You were playing the Prismatic Vistas.
Yes.
And I made mention that a lot of the times during my matches, I found myself with one land hands that I was fine with keeping, because I could go get a dual land, or, you know, a shock with a fetch, and be able to cast the Dragon Rage Channeler with the zero cost in order to look at my top card, so I could really, really dig. And I feel like I would have never kept those hands if that fetch was a Prismatic Vista.
I've been playing Prismatic Vista since it came out. Prismatic Vistas have a lot of shuffle creases on them, I'm sure. I haven't looked, but I'm just something I've, you know, used to playing. There are hands that I probably like shouldn't keep, and I'm trusting where I have the, you know, one land Prismatic Vista DRC and the bobble.
Yeah.
To get my second land or whatever. But I'm also playing like the Champions of Kamigawa land, the red one.
Yep, the Shinoku or something, that one that gives legendary a first strike. Yeah.
Yeah, and like there's games where I would keep that as my own land too. I feel like it's not as bad as you think it is, because, or at least in that build, because I was playing a lot of like one mana red removal, and like even if like you can just, if your hand is like, if you can play your removal right now, maybe in modern, it's not so bad. But I guess falling behind is always bad. I don't know.
And I think the other reason why it was a little easier for you to do it is just because on turn two, you don't need blue up, where sometimes in certain matchups, I would want to keep my counter spell up.
I was playing two counter spells, but I never needed blue on turn two. Like, needed it. I wasn't planning for that to happen. I was never going to leave up counter spell.
The only time I could see where I would really want to do it anyways is just like a Cascade matchup where I know they can go turn three, Cascade, beat me.
That was the beauty of the Spellstarter Sprite, is but even if they try to kill the Spellstarter Sprite, it still counters
it, and their Force of Negation can't hit it, which is the biggest thing. You just kind of play a Spellstarter Sprite and they're like, oh, I have wait, I guess I lose. Like,
It is pretty cool. I do like it. I just, in looking in my matchups, like I was saying earlier, I feel like most of the time, if I would have had Spellstarter Sprite instead of the hard counter spell, it would have been really, really bad for me.
I don't think that this is, I still don't think this is even the best build of blue red. I think Blue Red has meant there is no correct build of Blue Red right now.
Well, we talk about, like, you know, looking at your meta or whatever, and it's really hard to predict with something like this 1K, because obviously we all played a crazy amount of different decks, right?
Right.
Like, it's all over the board. And so, I don't know, I feel like you probably made the right choice anyways, because there's so many, like you said, there's so many removal cards that are just one or two mana that you can counter with it very easily. Right. That it might just be worth saying, well, screw it, I'll lose to the big spell that's going to beat me if I can't beat them by then.
I think there's a million different ways you can build Blue Red right now, and I think all of them are viable to go undefeated sure. on the day. The next tech I want to try is like Bone Crusher Giant and Stubborn Denial with the Sprite Dragon. I want to go on 7-0 with the Sprite Dragon. I really like that card. But
that's we see those builds all the time. Like, they exist. Like, I think what you're saying is perfect, Josh. One of the beauties of Blue Red is every week you can change the build and you're still going to have a tier one deck. There's really no way to like break that build. Whereas if you look at something like an Elementals deck, it is kind of set in stone. There's really not a lot of like flexibility. You can't go from spell starter to counter spell, or, you know, change it over from a Murktide into a Storming Entity. It's like you have to play these exact 20 Elementals. And that's the deck list. You have to play this mana base, and your wiggle room is like, am I going to play Prismatic Ending or maybe some other removal spell in that slot? But that's 60 plus maybe your sideboard, which always has flex spots, but your main 60 is so the same, whereas the Blue Red deck just has so many variants. So it's hard to always be, especially from a meta standpoint where anybody's playing like Blue White or control decks, it's hard to pinpoint what the list that you're on is and how to exactly go about it, because you do have to handle them differently, whether you're a Swift Spear or a, you know, or a Ravik, or they all play your Agumon, but those versions of that deck.
I was just about to say that. I don't even think the core of the deck is Blue Red. I think the core of the deck is just red. I think the core of the deck is Lightning Bolt, Ragavan, DRC, Mishra's Bauble. That's the core.
Well, your reach comes in the blue, where you get the expressive iterations when you're in top deck mode, and you just get so much value off that. And then you have the big Haymaker, which avoids a lot of removal that's existing in the format of Murktide.
Right.
So, I mean, congratulations, Josh. That was awesome. I was rooting for you. And when you were 4-0, the draws got weird, and everybody kept saying you can't draw. And I remember pulling you off to the side, and I remember coming up to you. I was like, you can draw. Don't listen to anybody. You can draw. Just this is the math. I like looked it up on the math kit, like the little calculator. I was like, just don't. Everybody, I swear, was like 4-1 players were like, nobody can draw. Nobody can draw. And I just kept rolling my eyes like, yes, you can, because X2s could make it. So a 4-1-1 was going to make it no matter what. Right. And they just, they played it out. And the reason they played it out is because of how companion works. So in the old system of like the DCI, no matter what would happen, when you played rounds of Magic, everybody was ranked based on, like, you know, if you were in the undefeated category, you were ranked 1 through whatever. If you were in the 6-1, you're ranked 9 through whatever. In this case, that didn't come into play. So in a normal tournament, let's say I'm on the 6-1 bracket and I am first place in the 6-1 bracket, I'm going to play the second place guy in the 6-1 bracket. I don't play the lowest tiered guy in the 6-1 bracket. That's not how it works. Right. In this tournament, it was just like, it literally just grab bag. So all the 6-1s got jumbled all the same record individuals got jumbled every single time, meaning that the top guy who was X1 could play the pair down, which should never happen. And that did in fact happen, which is really problematic from what we remember. I mean, we're all playing under the same rule set. So it's like, it's all equal footing there. But just the way that, like, people got blown out. People that were X2 that played superior opponents, but in round 5s and 6, played, like, the lower tier of them, got bumped out because of that exact reason. Whereas they should have got bumped in because they would have been at the top. Like, typically it's like, you know, tables 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the ranking. That's not how it was. People that were on table 4 would sporadically go to, like, table 7 in those rounds where you should only be climbing. It's really bizarre. So it wasn't great companion. You couldn't enter draws in manually through the app. You had to go and tell the judge, like, enter it as 1-0, and then they would have to go to the computer and manually change it. So you're like, you're depending on judges to do that. I mean, this app is not GP or tournament ready. And maybe when they announce whenever Wizards decides to announce their organized play, they'll come out with an efficient or a different system that we can use at a larger level. Like, I can't imagine what
the companion app during tournaments.
Say it again.
Instead of using, like, companion app during tournaments, you think they're going to come out with a different, like,
I think people are going to use I know the Nerd Rage series that's planning on doing 5Ks, which will probably be over 100 some people, is going to use a mimicking version of the DCI one. They're not going to use Companion.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
But those other ones aren't, they just don't, they don't build the same way that the old one was. Like, the fact that the DCI reporter is gone makes no sense to me, because it was already like a program that existed. They could have just stopped updating it and maybe have an offline client that people, you know, this is the newest version of this. If you need to run a tournament, you need to be on this version. Mm-hmm. Done and done. You know what I mean? And it already had opponent win percentage, game win percentage, and that, whereas some of these other things don't have that built in yet. They have like one of the three factors, but when we're getting into like 7, 8, 9 round tournaments, your opponents end up mattering to some degree in your like ranking.
Agreed.
Right.
So we're all waiting for Wizards to do something. We just don't have that yet. And the Companion app, I remember that announcement in the round one and people were just like, what? Like, what is this? And then it really caused confusion in round six where people could have done that, but they were just like, well, I don't know who I'm playing against. So I remember every round asking my opponent, what was your record? Because I didn't want to get the pair down, you know, because that would just completely annihilate you from the tournament. You would be auto gone, right? You know,
because of the breakers or whatever.
Yeah, it just crushes your breakers, because not only do you have to defeat that guy to progress, but on top of that guy gets another loss instead of like, you know, you and another 2-0, well, that guy becomes 2-1. Well, if you go against if you're 2-0 going against a 1-1, him going to a 1-2 means like you officially have the worst breaker of the 2-0s or the 2, you know, which right. happens naturally. That's like the randomness of like the first initial rounds, but we're talking long term in a tournament that shouldn't be happening around 6, 7, 8, you know. Usually those people that have X2 losses are already out. You're really just playing against people that have draws. Anything else you guys would like to say about the tournament as a whole?
Had a lot of fun.
Thank you to the judge for having for pulling together an effective tournament, and thank you for the store for hosting it. It was very clean. It was very well organized. Everything was the tournament itself was well organized. Everything was clear. I had no problem like seeing or knowing anything I want. I needed to well put together for the first possibly only event of the year. That was a great time.
Yeah, it was awesome. Even though I got crushed, I loved, like I said a little bit earlier, just getting those pre-tournament jitters. I don't know if you guys got that, but I forgot what that feeling was. It was like a pit in my stomach.
I assumed I was gonna lose the first round, and then I did, and then everything was gone.
Yeah,
the win. And then I was like, all right,
I showed up wanting to go 0-2 drop because I had stuff to do. Well, kind of, because I was supposed to go on vacation, but that didn't happen either.
I didn't even want to win this tournament. I can't believe I had to win it. Win.
For real.
It's funny.
Man, I forgot how salty people can get. And like, you get a little bit of it at FNM, right? But there was a point where a guy was just sitting in front of me. I won't name which opponent, but he was just sitting there going, man, I drew 10 of my 18 lands, man, da-da-da, and just, like, continuously, and, you know, I was trying to be polite and, you know, not be like, I don't care, bye. But he was just going on and on and on and on, and I forgot how that felt to just be kind of locked into listening to a guy complain.
Yeah, it's entertaining for the most part, but just brush that stuff off. Like, just, people are just going to be salty no matter what, and I'm sure people have to deal with that on a week-to-week basis at like the FNM level, or their local shark or whatever, that when he loses, he just makes a big, big dramatic, I'm leaving.
Tony.
Very respectable. I had like a good interaction with all my opponents all day.
I mean, Tony, you have told us, Tony, that you like to go out into the parking lot after you lose round one and just screech your tires, car.
I put it in neutral and I rev the engine.
That's really good for your car.
Just ruin it immediately. I'm just like,
I definitely spent a lot of time outside. I had to get outside and like breathe. And I like drank like 3 Gatorades that entire thing. I was staying hydrated. I definitely was like on my P's and Q's though. Like Tony even said, Tony congratulated me for playing tight.
Yeah.
I wanted to think I was playing very tight. I wanted to thank Tony for bringing up the Spellstarter sprite tech, which I kind of stole from him. You should have played it. But
list I found wasn't good enough. I played some test hands and I kept running into having Archmage Charm as well as having Field of Ruin. I was like, can't play this deck.
I was already like sold on cutting that card. That card's way too oppressive for a blue red mana base.
Yeah.
At least when you're playing Prismatic Vista, at least for me, there was no way I could play that card. I tried. It's not happening.
All right, guys. I normally do a question of the week. We're running a little long, so I'm just going to hold that off to the next one. It was a real banger. I'm going to let you guys think on this for a week, so I'll ask it next week. But the question is, if there was a heads-up commander, 1K, what would you play in it? Just think on it. Don't answer it now. I know JB is just grinding his teeth right now because heads-up commander is just like the worst version of Legacy. But yeah.
I got a good question of the week. Here. How long is the podcast right now?
I don't care. Just
that was my question of the week.
What is it?
How long is the podcast right now?
I don't know. I don't know.
I did want to make a statement. If Antonio is listening, I'm still waiting on them Taskers to be worth more than 50 cents, man. Still been sitting on them for like 3 years.
That's the way it goes.
Oh, man.
As always, we're always on Facebook. Give us a like to our page. Give us a follow where we post weekly episodes so you can hear us week after week. And then you can always send a question to email paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. And no, we don't have any questions this week. Sign us out, Josh.
It is Wednesday, my dudes. Go Brewers.
Me and Tony had gum that was from 30-year-old or like 40-year-old baseball card.
Dude, they were like from the 50s. Those were we might have had 80-year-old gum. It was pretty bad.
It was insane.
It turned to dust when you bit it.
Yeah, like the second it went into our mouth, it just instantly turned to dust and then like got into your saliva. And so you just had like this dusty saliva, like weird texture.
We are now gum.
Like just sucking on sandpaper.
It fused with our fucking DNA.
Yeah,
that's all I can explain about it, because that's how like encapsulating it was when we put it in our mouth. We're like, how do we get this out? We're just spitting for like minutes. Like, I was like, there's still more. How?